Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Griefsters. Hope you're having an okay week wherever you are. It is now getting very cold and dark in the Northern Hemisphere. I hope you're doing okay with the lack of sunlight if you're listening from the Northern Hemisphere. And we're approaching, you know, festival times, family times. So yeah, I just hope everyone is hanging in there. I know it sounds cheesy, but light candles, that's genuinely has helped me through many a dark season, just to light candles and remember that this too shall pass. A bit of admin as ever, a reminder, my book launch is on January the 17th at Earth in Hackney in London. If you want to come and see the amazing Fee Glover interview me about grief and death and writing the book, and we'll obviously be chatting about her perspective on it all as well, you can head to Fane Productions, F-A-N-E, to get tickets for January the 17th. The book is out on January the 19th. Please do pre-order if you would like to buy it. It really does help authors in that first week of sales. And if you do pre-order and you upload your proof of purchase, you can get a free pin badge designed by Jade Perkin, who did our amazing Griefcast logo. All the information is on social media at The Griefcast on Twitter and Instagram. Do tweet or DM me if you can't find any of these links and I will help you find them. Thank you so much for listening. This week, I'm talking to a truly inspirational person, Leila F. Saad. Leila is an author, a speaker, a teacher who specialises on the topics of race, identity, leadership, personal transformation, and social change. Now, the reason you may have heard of Leila is she wrote an incredible book called Me and White Supremacy. It came out in, you know, paper form in 2020, but it was available as a download before that off her Instagram page. And it just grew and grew and grew because her writing and the things that she's saying are so worth reading and worth understanding. So she wrote the incredible book Me and White Supremacy. And there is also a young adult version as well, Me and White Supremacy, for if you have someone young in your life who wants to understand anti-racism and racism and how it works. She is such an amazing person, and this chat is a little bit different, I suppose, to traditional Griefcast. We're kind of really talking just about grief and, yeah, and how we can help each other and connect with each other. And I really appreciated Leila giving me her time, and the work that she's doing is extraordinary. Really sincerely recommend reading her book, and I know that it's not an easy topic to face and it's not a simple thing to break down, but Leila has done the work, so the least we can do is do the work back to help and read her book and follow her on social media and see what she's doing. So here is Leila in her own brilliant way.
Mm-hmm.
So, Layla, who are we remembering today?
Top of mind for me are two uncles that we lost, who passed in the last 2 years.
Okay.
The first is my mom's brother. So both of my parents come from very big families. They have a lot of siblings, but this brother is the first of the siblings to pass.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. So it kind of just sent shocks of ripples throughout the whole family. And I think for my mom and me witnessing her as her daughter and the firstborn was seeing her really understanding, like, now my generation is at the age where we are starting to pass on.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was really, it was really hard for her, really hard for her siblings. And as her child, just hard to witness, because I couldn't imagine being in the position in the time where my brothers and I are at that age, you know.
When did he die? Was it, so you said a couple
of
years
during
ago?
So it was 2020, during the year of the pandemic, but it was not from COVID.
Mm.
And that was really hard, I think, on his family as well. And again, I don't want to kind of speak for them, but it meant that there was a delay in dealing with things to do with his death, because
right.
the priority was the pandemic.
Yeah.
So it was kind of grief upon grief. And it was a time he lives in the UK. And so it was a time as well when there was the highest levels of lockdown as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was very, and we're all the way over here in Qatar. My family's very spread out, right? So I'm in Qatar with my family. I have family in Oman. I have family in Tanzania, and family in Wales and in England. So it was, we all very spread out, all experiencing this collective grief, and also all very separated and isolated because of the pandemic.
Yeah, that's hard, isn't it? Because when you do have, I've got family over the place, and it's a hard reminder when something hard happens, like of how
yes.
far away you are. Because I think we live in, you know, technology, and you can speak to people, you can text them, and you feel in contact. And I definitely felt when lockdown happened, and I had family, they just, you know, they aren't around the corner. You can't get to them. You can't. And then
right.
it was illegal to get to them. It was like,
right.
The government won't let me get to you. That you suddenly realise, oh, we are far away, aren't we? And that's a kind of a strange feeling as well. That, and it's funny because I think sometimes we think it's new, like, oh, now people live in different places, but we've always done this. People have always moved and traveled and lived in different places. It's just,
yeah,
I think the technology allows us to kind of, I don't know, perhaps lie to the narrative slightly of like, oh no, I am round the corner. And then
yeah,
when, like you said, when a death happens, it's like, oh, I'm not, am I? I can't pop
no.
over. Like, how does that feel? And
yeah.
And is your mum in Qatar as well? Is she in the
mm-hmm.
UK? Oh, she's in Qatar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you were both
yeah.
far
we
away
were there.
From...
Yeah. yeah, so we were here together, and we're very close with my parents. So, you know, we were together. And
yeah.
again, as the eldest and the only daughter, you know, I'm watching her navigate this, trying to hold space for her, really not understanding, because I've no lived experience to know what this even feels like, just pure devastation. And just trying my best to be there for her, and also remembering him. And I remember the last time that we had been in contact with each other. So I actually hadn't seen him since I was a kid, but I remember him very fondly. And through the years, he would message me every now and then and just tell me how proud he was of me. And the last message that I had of him was a message where he said he lived in the UK, as I said, he'd been watching Sky News. And he said, you just came on the TV and you were just there, you know? And he said, I just want you to know how proud we are of you and the work that you're doing. And you know, that's the last message that I have of him, is him just really affirming, you know, how proud he was of me and how proud the family are of me. And that meant a lot to me.
Yeah, that's amazing. What an amazing thing to have when it does come to grief, that you're like, well, that connection was still there, that love was still there. How was it with your mum then? Did you feel that kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Like that slip where the parent suddenly needs you to be strong. And yeah. you're kind of like, oh, hang on. No, I'm yeah. the one who gets the attention and I'm the one who gets to be the need. Yeah.
I mean, my mom has always been, she's very much like a strong African woman. You know, she's very strong and is the one in her family that people turn to when there's an issue, even though she's not one of the eldest at all. She's one of the younger ones, but she just has that constitution of, you know, we will pull things together and we will figure things out. So she still showed up in that way, but for her siblings, but we're here with her in real time. So we know what she's really going through. So it was then, and then also my other uncle, who is my aunt's, so my mom's sister's husband.
Right, yeah.
So not a blood-related uncle, but yeah. very much a part of our family. And that also hit her very hard because he wasn't just an in-law to her. She actually, they grew up together.
Oh, wow.
He helped raise her. And so it felt like for her, I think it was the shock of my sister has lost her husband. I can't imagine what it will be like when I lose my husband or yeah. my husband loses me. And also that this person wasn't just an in-law, but felt like another brother yeah. to her. Felt like almost like a father to her. And her father passed away many years ago. But it was again, this huge, huge shock. And like I was saying, she's a very strong woman, but in these moments, you know, she was completely broken down. And I did have to mother her in those moments and kind of switch roles and kind of be, and I remember she was fasting the day it was Ramadan. So we were fasting. We're Muslim. And I had to tell her, you need to break your fast.
Yeah.
You need to eat something. You need to eat something. And she said, no, I can't. I've got to finish the fasting day. And I said, you are going to collapse. Mm. You need to eat something right now. Right. And so my brother was visiting from the UK and he was with me and he was like, yeah, you need to eat something. We gave her some dates and some water and just, you know, helped her to breathe. And
oh, that's so hard to have that happen in the middle of.
Very difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the kind of not silver lining, but the, I don't even know what the languaging is for it, but you know, we have this understanding in Islam that those who pass during the month of Ramadan, that is actually a very big blessing because it's the holiest month in our year. And so while you're holding the grief of losing someone, you're also grateful that this is the time that they passed in.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was tough. And you know, so again, for the whole family, she was able to go that day because in Islam, we bury the bodies straight away.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So the grieving process is very, like, rushed. Like, yeah. we don't keep the body out. We, the same day or as soon as possible, you know, we do that. And so she, I don't remember if she made it for the funeral, but she was there that same day. She was there very, very quickly. And I had to, you know, I had to pack her things. I had to, like, you know, make sure that she had everything she needed because she couldn't think straight.
Yeah.
And we have in Islam, when somebody passes away, we have these days where after the funeral, you know, you go and visit the family who have lost their loved one, and it lasts for a number of days. And my uncle was somebody who was very well known and very well respected. He lived in Oman. And so you had a lot of people, just so many people coming to pay their respects, coming to show their support. And it really is like a, in Islam, it's not something that's kind of nice to do. It really is actually a duty that you have. If you know this person, you must go and pay your respects, no matter whether you knew them because they were your friend or because they were someone you work with, you know, so whatever the case may be, you have to go and show your respect. And I really appreciate that part of, you know, my faith, that it really is about the community. It's about showing up and honoring the grieving and honoring the loss. And it's, I don't know, like when I kind of have a mental block of when I start thinking about it for me, my family, my brothers, because we're so much younger than my mom's generation. But I know that when our time comes, that's those same practices that we'll be taking part in. But just thinking about it, and you know, my work is about becoming a good ancestor. So I keep this mindfulness around, like, you know, our time is not infinite and we will be gone at some point. But I think it's human nature to hold that as a almost like a theory, like we know, you know.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is hard to hold. And so we push it away.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like you said, it just depends on your relationship to grief. And because my dad died when I was 15. So, you know, the joke I always say is, like, you know, I got to the club early. Like, I'm at the party before everyone else, and I'll put the chairs out, put some Twiglets out. Like, and for me, it's something that I find hard to not to rest from, because it's something that's, like, burned in early of, like, this is what happens. Death is so present. And I have to work on, like, it's not going to happen every day. It's okay. You can, like, but I know from, you know, talking to so many people, the same thing, that if you don't have it, if you don't have that, you know, someone die really young, really close to you, then it is theoretical. And it is like, oh yes, I know I should think about that. And it's funny, isn't it? Because it's easy to keep it at a safe distance until, you know, until it's not. And you see someone in pain, like you had with your mom, and having to rush. And I think it's interesting what you're saying about Islam and the paying respect. So I know that I've had other guests, especially in Irish culture, that's a huge thing. Mm. Like, you know, you go to the wake, and I've spoken to so many Irish people who've, like, it doesn't matter how little you knew them, you go to the funeral.
Right.
And the same in Jewish culture as well. Well, obviously they sit Shiva and they go around. And as someone who, you know, was brought up, like, proper, like, Church of Englanders, and, like, not really, like, that very loose, we don't have that when it comes to funerals. You know, like, you can have a small funeral because people just feel like, oh, I didn't know them well enough. Like, they don't want to be rude. Right. Like, oh, I don't want to turn up. How rude of me. Whereas my Irish friends are like, no, I mean, if you met them once, you go to the funeral like that.
Right.
And I had a situation recently, a friend had lost someone in her family, and our Irish friend was like, well, I'm coming to the funeral. And she was like, no, it would be weird if you came. And she was like, no, but I met them once at your party. She was like, no, all my family would think it was strange. Like, we would be weirded out. And then we would all be on edge of, like, oh, we have to be nice to this because we don't know, you know. And it was really interesting, that cultural thing of, like, but I think, like you said, I do wish we had more of a fixed structure, because I do think it helps that immediate aftermath of, like, okay, this is what we're doing today. All the people are coming. They're all going to do this. They're all going to remember them. And I think we don't have, ours is so loose and the structure's so vague that often it seems like, oh, should we do that? Is it, like, too much?
And that adds stress, moment. Yeah. Right? Because for us, it's kind of like, drop everything and go. We just know this is what's happening. Yeah. You know? But I can imagine, but I also understand, you know, the other perspective of kind of like, well, you know, this is a really intimate moment. So we don't want people who didn't necessarily know them to be here in this really intimate and vulnerable moment, you know. But it's really interesting how different cultures do things differently.
Yeah. And I definitely think I do the Irish way of at least being like, funerals not being a big deal, I think is quite helpful. Of like, you go, you knew them, you went. And I think I've met people who've got to, like, you know, their late 40s and they haven't been to a funeral. And that to me is like, how have you managed that? Because I've been to so many. But also I can then it becomes very scary. And then your own mortality becomes very scary because you're like, oh, it's all over there. Like, I don't want to... Oh, I don't know. I've never been to, I've never seen a dead body. I've never seen something go into the ground. And that part of the process, you know, like you said, it's going to happen. It's not going to happen to all of us. So it's, I wonder, so how are you feeling about your, that's a big question, but the podcast, like your own mortality, are you feeling like it's kind of woken up something that you didn't really want to think about, despite you said, like, you know, you do this good ancestor work. So it's like the two truths fighting each other at the same time.
I always say, like, I'm here to become a good ancestor, but I'm not ready to be an ancestor yet. And I hope I live a very long and deep and full and expansive and meaningful life. And that's the perspective that I try to keep, is that I'm here for living.
Yeah.
And when I'm living, I want my living, whatever time I have here, to be well lived, to be intentionally lived. I think that just bringing that influence of Islam into my life, and the way that my parents taught us as well, is like, we fully have a perspective and an understanding that this life is limited, mm-hmm. right? And the way that they have role modeled to us, and the way I've even seen it when we've showed up for that wake, right? When we go and visit, whether it's family or friends, is that, you know, you'll say, I'm really sorry for your loss. And they say, it's okay. They're trying to reassure you that they're okay.
Yeah.
And it comes from a place of not trying to be polite. It's really of, we accept as Muslims that this is the natural course of things.
Mm.
And for us to be angry about it or to be in denial is to deny what we believe.
Yeah.
Right. So one of the things that we immediately say when we hear somebody has passed is this phrase, from God we come and to God we return.
That's lovely.
Right. So when you hear somebody's passed, that's the first thing that you say, from God we come and to God we return. And it's this immediate acceptance that this may be a painful thing.
Mm.
This may be something that is horrific, but we all understand that this is what being a human being means, that we are born and we die, right? And it feels very like black and white, but it is. There's nothing that we can actually do about that. If we're here, we had no choice in being born. And when we go, we have no choice that at some point we're going.
Yeah.
So my parents have always role modeled that messaging and that acceptance to us. But, and at the same time, it terrifies me.
Yeah.
Right? This year, we were on vacation in the UK. So my parents, myself, and we visited my two brothers who live there, and we celebrated Eid in Bristol with my youngest brother and his family. They've just recently had their first child. So we all got to be together for Eid. It's been years since we were all together as a family for Eid. So all the kids, all the grandkids, like, it was amazing. And, you know, my mom, we'd finished eating and she was like, I want us to have a very serious conversation. I was like, what is happening? It felt like an intervention. And she was like, your dad does not want to write his will, and he needs to write it, and you guys need to talk to him about it.
Wow.
Right? Yes. And so we had a conversation about that, right? And I said, when we get back, and I haven't done it yet, and I think that's the part of me that's trying to be in denial.
Yeah.
But I said, you and I are going to sit down and we're going to write this all down.
Mm.
And, you know, my dad is he's like a stoic. So he's not hyper emotional or anything like that.
Yeah.
He's very accepting of how things are. But I do think that deep down inside, this is something that he's trying to put off.
Yeah.
If I write it,
it will happen. Yeah. So
it makes it more real.
It'll never happen. Yeah.
Right. It just makes it more real. But as I'm getting older, and, you know, I'm also at that age where I keep thinking about, like, gosh, like, I'm almost 40. Like, when my mom was almost 40, how old was I?
Yeah.
And what was I thinking of her? You know, because I have a 12-year-old. My mom and I had our first child around the same age. So, you know, around the time that I was 12, and I remember being 12, I remember thinking my mom was like all-knowing. So grown, knows everything about herself and the world. And I'm like, I'm still like trying to figure it out. And I have kind of reverse compassion.
Yes, lots of conversations with my mum of like, sorry about that, actually. It's now I'm here, I see that's quite annoying. She was like, yeah,
right.
Yeah, it is, right? You're like, yeah. Only now I'm here, though. It took me all this time to get here.
Yeah,
it's hard. And I think mortality is difficult for people. You know, it is difficult for people, especially if, you know, like you said, your immediate circle is all still here. Then you all kind of, I think everyone gets into that la, la, la. Let's just not think about it.
Yeah. And I'm really grateful and fortunate to have both my parents still alive, both quite healthy. Mm. I mean, they have various, you know, health things, but they take really good care of themselves. You know, my mom's recently had a knee replacement surgery, and that's to give her, you know, more quality time with this leg, right? Yeah. For many years to come, hopefully. And so, again, it's like time is really weird because, you know, you could lose someone really young, as you have done. You know, you could lose someone that's at our age now. You could lose someone and they've lived like a very, very long life. And I think no matter when it happens, it still is catastrophic.
Yeah.
You know, it's still like, I can't believe that person's not going to be here anymore. But I think just to go back and answer your question about how I cope with it, I think the way that I try to think about it is I don't get to choose when my time is. Mm. No, but none of us do. So with the time that I have, like, let me try and give it my all, right? And that means loving on my people, right? That means loving on myself, right? Like, I can't wait to say, well, I'll get to a certain age and then I'll have a good relationship with myself. Mm. Like, I need to figure this thing out now, right? Let me do work and spend my time on things that matter to me so that whenever I go, whenever that is, we'll always wish we had more time.
Yeah.
But when that time does come, that I hope more often than not, I spent it in ways that I would look back and say, I'm glad I did that. I'm glad I showed up in that way.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I mean, like, the legacy you've already created, I think, is incredible. So, and thank obviously, you know, you're still going, you're continuing, you're not stopping that work. So to carry on that process is, yeah, I guess what I'm saying is, like, when it happens daily, you can be like, yeah, you did good. You like, don't worry. No one's going to be like, what did she do? What can we say? Like, it's not that situation. Well, like, she was,
you know, yeah. I appreciate that. But I do think that, and I'm grateful for that. You know, I truly am, because I think that was, being able to have that kind of impact was something that had been sitting inside of me for a very long time. Like, I think I'd always known I am here to have an impact in a bigger way. I just didn't know what that way was. And me and white supremacy isn't really something that I even created. It was like it came through me, and then I said, yes, okay, I'll do this. I'm now in a part of my life where I'm building a business and a legacy, and I'm like, no, this is what I want to do. Yeah. I want it to look like this. I want it to be like this. And so I'm grateful for the legacy that I've already created, but we never reach a point where it's like, okay, and that's it.
Yeah. You never feel like, oh, it's done. Like, it's never like,
it's done,
okay,
right.
Ding, come out the oven. That's finished. Everybody's ready. Time to eat, and then I won't make it again.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
Exactly.
It's I think that's what you can do in life, really, is wait for, listen to that thing that you said is trying to come through you. Because I think a lot of us do have that of like, what is it? It's something. Yeah. Listen, which takes years and years and years. And then when you do know, put it out there and then keep going. There was a great quote, I think it's from The Artist's Way, where it was like, it's from The Artist's Way or somewhere else, where it was like, you can't just wait for the bus. Like, you have to run for the bus. You can't just sit at the bus stop and be like, oh, it's like, if you see it, you got, there it is, that's your bus, go. And I thought, that's a really there's some active work that needs to happen. And then once that has happened, like you said, what you've done with me and white supremacy, it started, as you said, as such a ground roots thing, and then has built. That to be able to sit back and go, wow, like, this is a big change I've made.
With me and white supremacy, so that sentence that you just said, this is the big change I've made. And it's like, Yes, I own my part, but I'm also really clear, and increasingly every year more clear, that we don't do anything alone.
Mm.
We're not designed to do things alone.
Yeah.
Right? And so the phase that I'm in now, where I'm building this business, the part that gives me the most joy is being able to build it with a team. With Me and White Supremacy, I had a team, as in I had the support of my husband, my family, my friends, but a lot of it was me.
Yes.
You know what I mean? At the front, right? Taking the hits, doing the work, and it took a toll on me.
Oh my goodness, I can imagine.
You know, it took an incredible toll on me. And there was also a lot of grief through that process of creating something meaningful and something impactful. And I never want to bypass or skip over grief, because it's a natural part of our human experience. I think, you know, toxic positivity is very dangerous. But I can choose how I want to lead, right? And I choose to lead with my full humanity and with a sense of joy at the forefront. So I'm not going to, like, I've gone through the cycle of Me and White Supremacy, the quote unquote success of it. And then now I'm in a new cycle of a startup business.
Mm.
And that brings a lot of ups and downs, a lot of challenges and all the things that come with it. And I want to lead with joy, because coming back to that question of, like, how am I thinking about grief? And I'm really thinking about it. It's like, what's the quality of my life?
Mm.
You know, grief is moments that come to us that were unexpected. We don't wake up and say, you know what? I would really love to feel grief today.
Yeah.
You know, let me go and create a situation of grief for myself. Right.
No, it just shows up.
Yeah. So it's going to show up regardless. Right. I don't have to go looking for it.
Yeah.
And I don't have to put myself in situations where I'm, and this is what I felt through the Me and White Supremacy work, was in order for it to be what it is, I had to put myself in a firing line.
Yeah.
And so grief was a part of my existence, because I felt like let me take this hit now so that it will serve others later.
Mm.
And I don't regret, you know, the choices that I made around that, but I also know that it had impacts on my mental and physical well-being that would not allow me to live a long, full life if I kept going in that way.
Mm.
And that's why, so I choose to live with joy at the forefront, because that is more sustainable for me as a change maker, and that will allow me to have a bigger impact and a longer term impact as well.
I think that's amazing. I think to be able to say that after the world we live in is very commendable. Without sounding, I hope it doesn't sound patronizing, but to be able to lead with joy, I think is a choice and a mindset.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. For people who don't know, the book, and there is a young adult version and there is an adult version, but it came through an unusual way like it was, you were writing on social media, on Instagram, and then you made a workbook that was downloadable for people. Hundreds and thousands of people downloaded it, and then it sort of got packaged into a book, which then became a bestseller. So as you said, you really were at the forefront. And this is, again, I guess it's worth mentioning, this is pre the murder of George Floyd, pre the Black Lives Matter huge swell movement.
This is a time when talking about the words white supremacy was like, right? Yeah. Like, it wasn't in the lexicon. Like, it wasn't, it obviously it had been, I don't want to I don't want to give the impression like I invented it or anything like that.
No, but it meant something very specific, I think. People, white supremacy meant like, you know, Southern states, KKK, like it was something like, oh, it's a very extreme and it doesn't relate to anybody else now. It's gone. It's basically gone. I think that would be
I think unless you were in academic circles, unless you were in activism work, unless you were in, we're in those spaces. I think to most people, they would hear the word white supremacy. Like, I remember we were doing the white supremacy challenge, and people were posting, like, white people were posting on their own pages about the reflections they were doing each day. And you could see their friends commenting and saying, but I don't think you're a white supremacist. I don't think that you're racist. I don't think that you need to do this work. Right. And now people are like, oh, like there's been a lot more books out. There's been a lot more events that have happened. Right. There's been a lot more speaking out loud about the ways that these things are showing up across industries. That people now are like, okay, I get what this is. They're not accusing me of being a white supremacist, right? But back then, no, it was very different. And it's such a short period of time for things to have changed so drastically.
It is really short. And I think that's something like, again, that technology thing as well, of like the speed at which it has moved and the speed at which, like you said, that phrase has become... means different things now. Like, I don't think, I still, obviously there's still a lot of work to do, a lot, but I think I do remember when, you know, I started following you on Instagram, and I remember, again, me and one other friend followed you, and we would talk about it, but privately, because everyone else would be like, what, our white friends, what do you mean white supremacy? And me and her had followed you for a while, and we would be like, oh, okay, so like the workbook, and I've realized this, and yes, I've realized that too. Yes, okay.
Right.
Okay, we're both, okay. And it was sort of like a sort of thing of like, oh God, what is like, and it's not, obviously I've got so much work to do. And culturally, especially in this country, in the UK, there's a lot of work to do. We are not finished, as we said, it's not finished. But the fact, the speed at which it has become an acceptable conversation for people to be like, oh yes, okay, like I, you know, all of these, like you said, the variety of books that are now available, it has moved so fast. And I know you wanted to talk a little bit about collective grief, and I just wondered, is that like, what did you feel like you wanted to say about
that? I mean, I'm taking a deep breath because there is so much collective grief. We are all still living in the experience of a world now where coronavirus exists, and all the people that were lost at the height of the pandemic and all the people who are still dying, from this virus, the climate crisis, the ongoing violence through, systemic racism, transphobia in the US, gun violence, so many different issues across so many different countries, so many different issues. Yeah. So I don't want anyone to have the impression that, you know, we're only talking about one perspective here. Every country is dealing with its thing. Right. Or it's things. And it feels like I was thinking about this the other day. It feels almost like we've accepted on some level the inevitability of us heading towards a dystopia.
Right. And, oh, I guess the world's ending. Okay.
Right. Like this is what's happening. And I think that's where grief becomes numbness.
Mm.
And we kind of just accept that this is what's happening. And I think that's really dangerous.
Mm.
Because when we accept it, we release ourselves and each other of taking responsibility for what we do in our time here.
Mm.
And what I know is that those who came before us survived, worked hard, championed, protested, advocated so that we can have the rights and the freedoms that we have today. If they in their time had said, you know what, like this is how it's always going to be, so we shouldn't do anything, just live our lives and get on with it. If the masses of people had done that, we wouldn't even have what we have today.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me what you're saying, because I think that's where we get the difficulty of what the language problem, right? Grief. Because when mm-hmm. someone dies, you do have to accept it. You do have yes. to go, I couldn't do anything. Humans yes. die. Like, I am powerless to this world.
Yeah.
And to what I am. I'm a human. I will die. This person dies. And part of grief and part of that process is the acceptance of, like, mm-hmm. that's just what happens. And you can rage and you can cry and you can scream. But there is, you know, there is just a part of it that's just, what can
Absolutely.
You do? And then there's this other grief where you're like, my world is falling apart. Like, everything I believed in doesn't seem to mm-hmm. exist. All the foundations I used to put my feet on aren't there.
Yeah.
And that's where you need, like you said, not an acceptance of like, oh, well, they decide. They will tell me right. how it is. That, like you said, that's where the protesting or the using yeah. your voice, however you want to use it, it doesn't have to be,
exactly.
as you say in your book, it doesn't have to be screaming. There's different
right.
ways of making a difference.
Absolutely.
And it's separating those griefs of like, this isn't, like, it's almost like we're like, the world died and we're all like, oh, well, it died.
Right.
What can
right.
we do? And it's like, it's not dead. It isn't a dead right. person that we have to bury
no.
and honor
right.
and walk away from. It's still here and we're all still
yeah.
here. So yeah, it's trying to help people, I guess, with that process. Like, you are feeling a grief for something that's gone, but there
yeah.
is still something here. It's not the same.
Yes.
And even in that sentence, I'm disagreeing with myself, because you do have to accept they're gone, but then you also accept that you're still alive. You're still
yeah.
here. You can still
yes.
breathe. So you
right.
need to live. And that's to say, I
yes.
guess that's a similar thing to what we're saying of like, there are these awful things going on, awful. And you feel so powerless. You know, I feel
yes.
it. We all feel it. Like, you just wake up and think, what can I do? Like,
mm-hmm.
what can I do? And trying to work out what you can do, as you said, like
yeah.
those ancestors did, of like, well, okay, I don't want to be silent, I don't want to sit back
yeah.
but it is hard at the moment. It's definitely
absolutely
like hard.
And it's very overwhelming, you know. And this
mm.
is why I wanted to create Become a Good Ancestor, because I know that there were these, like you said, hundreds of thousands of people who came through an experience like me in white supremacy,
mm.
were activated to create change, and then were kind of like, what am I supposed to be doing? And they're sort of spending a lot of energy thinking and acting in ways where they're like, I need to speak out about this. I need to be joining this thing. I need to be giving my money here. I need to be, you know, talking about this. And there's so many issues, and then you get burnt out,
yes,
right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then you get apathetic, and then you're like, what's even the point? What can I even do? And, you know, the first thing that we say, Become a Good Ancestor, if you go on our website, is you don't need to start a revolution. You just need to do your part,
mm.
right? And so there's an acceptance of us as human beings being finite beings, where we're not omnipotent. We can't fix all things.
No.
We can do something, though, and that something can really change things. So this podcast, for example, and people who've been listening to it, and I know you've done a lot of seasons, right? Like, you've reached a lot of people with this podcast. And even if just one person or just 10 people get something from this podcast, that has a ripple effect, because everyone they come into contact gets to be impacted by the way that they show up differently when it comes to grief, right? Mm. And they'll pass on a nugget that they heard or a quote or perspective that can help change that person's life, and the ripple effect continues. So we start there with this understanding, like, you don't need to start a revolution, you just need to do your part. And then the second part is, you do need to figure out, what is my thing that I'm here to do, right? And for that, we created a self-study course called Claim Your Space, because we wanted to help empower change makers to understand there is a space that I can choose to occupy, that I can choose to dedicate my time and energy to, that if I'm focused on that, that is what can be the vehicle for me to do my part in creating change. And so one of the major things that people get from taking that course is understanding two things. What is my right work? And what is my right channel? What is it, the work that I'm here to do? And how is it that I'm here to do it?
Yeah.
And that comes from digging within, you know, and our work is about doing, it's the place where we say it's the place where inner work meets social change. Somebody outside of yourself cannot tell you, hey, you should start a podcast on grief.
Yeah.
Right?
that comes from the strange thoughts 6 years ago. Oh, yeah, maybe I would. Yeah. That, oh, no,
right?
No one
that's
would just,
an internal. Yeah. That's an internal thing. The next thing that often happens is we get really excited. We're doing our right work. We're in our right channel. We're very aware of the issues impacting our world. And we're very aware, like I said, that we feel like we're heading towards this dystopia and we feel like we need to be working harder, faster, more. You said several times in this interview, you know I've got so much work to do. I've got so much work to do. And I think so many of us carry that understanding, and it is true. And if we're not careful, we can very quickly end up in burnout.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's the next thing that we offer is a program called Deepen, which is a group healing experience for change makers who are ready to do change making differently. And when I say differently, what I'm saying is it's about changing the paradigm of this belief that in my lifetime, I need to work as hard as I can to undo everything that's come before me.
Yeah, like I'm the person who's going to solve it. It's me.
Right.
I'm going to change it all, guys. Don't worry. I read Layla's book, and I'm going to do everything. Like, yeah.
That's it. That's it. Like, I'm going to use every waking moment. I'm going to pull from all of my emotions, all of my well-being, everything to solve this thing in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And what we have are change makers who are burnt out, who are not well-resourced from within, who end up harming either themselves or other people because they're not being taken care of, and who begin to use the very, you know, that quote by Audre Lorde, the master's tools will not destroy the master's house. Like, they are beginning to use the very tools of the systems we're trying to fight the system.
Yeah.
Which is that hardworking perfectionism, you know, no sense of like compassion or anything. Like, we got to go, because we got to fix this thing. And it's like, what's happened to your humanity in the process?
It's so. Just, you're very good, Layla, very good. Just, because I was thinking about grief, and I was thinking, it's just obviously I relate everything to grief. If it's a similar thing, and I've talked about this so much on the show, of like people who are like, right, I'm going to grieve, I'm going to get my grieving done, I'm going to do it, and then it's done, and I'm going to be okay. And rather than going, it never goes, it never disappears. You never don't feel sad about that person.
That's right.
You learn to live with it. And again, I think that's what we're talking about, this collective grief, rather than being like, oh, it's it, we're in a dystopia, so I've got to put my head under the duvet and never look out again. It's like, it's always been bad. Like, that's the thing I'm trying to, I'm trying to remember.
Yes.
Like, it's always been, I keep thinking about like the English Civil War and like how mad a time that must have been to live through, where like, you know, they just took Christmas away, and then they took the king and queen away, and everything you ever knew. Obviously, I'm not saying, you know, I'm not judging any of those things. I'm just saying that's what happened. And I keep thinking, well, that must have been really scary. It must have been really scary can you practice your religion, you know, freely and keep, and like, be, who can you trust? Like, who's on your side? And everything being so binary, you're either with us or against us. And I keep thinking, well, that must have been really scary. So this, it's not like it was easier before. It just, you just think it was.
No.
Like,
and also that awareness of, like, you know, we talk about privilege in me and white supremacy. So I do think about, you know, for some groups of people, like, living through enslavement, that was a dystopia already.
Oh my God.
Right.
Yes.
Without any proof that it would ever be different, because the very kind of foundation that it was laid on was this complete acceptance of this quote unquote fact that Black people were not human beings. That was the absolute, that was the belief, like that was factual, like, you know, so why would it be any different, right? So that was a dystopia. And then you have people who are living today in, you know, war-torn experiences, you know, and that is a dystopia right now. And then you have people who are going through their own individual dystopias right now because of abusive situations that they may be in, traumatic situations that they may be in. And so we have to understand, like, it's not something that, yes, things are heading in a very bad direction, right?
Yeah, no one's denying that. Doesn't look great right now.
Doesn't look good, right? We're heading there. And when I think about, especially, and I, you know, I want to make clear that my ancestors were not part of the transatlantic slave trade, right? That's not my background. But I really do think that we can learn from and understand, like, they were living through a dystopia, and that many of them died and many of them survived. And even in moments, we're able to thrive. And when I say that, I mean moments of building relationships, experiencing love, like those things, right? And so we have to really understand the place of privilege that we sit at right now. And that if we're giving up, right, and there's a lot of privilege that we hold, like, what does that mean for the future? Like, we have to be doing everything that we can, but we also have to be, this is the other part, right? Like the both end. We have to be doing everything that we're able to in the life that we have. And we have to try not to dehumanize ourselves through that process as well.
Yes. I'm like, yes, I want to clap. I feel like I'm like, yes, yes. I want to add things. I'm like, Harry, you don't have anything to add. That Layla just said it all. That's fine. That's enough. Like, oh yeah, I agree. yeah, I think it's just really interesting. And I do, you know, obviously relate back to grief of, like, you have to feel the pain and have it and live. You have to keep on living. Like,
yeah.
And surviving and trying to thrive and trying to, like you said, create something for yourself. And that is, it's not easy. No one's saying it's easy, and no one's saying it's like it's always joyful, but there is joy. And I think what we've been talking about a lot is something that human beings fight against, which is holding two things, like two things are true at the same time. Like, this is the, you know, the world is looks like it's heading off a cliff, but also there is moments of joy and there is moments still of peace and there's moments of happiness. And it's always been this way. It's always been this tension. Mm-hmm. It's always felt like this. And what are you going to do? But equally, like, you, I thought it was so interesting in terms of grief and in terms of life, of like, don't play the system at its own game. Don't be like, well, I will defeat it, because that's how they think. That's how we've always lived. And like, well, what do I need to burn down and destroy to make it mine? And now it's mine, and now I'm safe. And you can feel that at the moment. So many people are like, I need to make my castle, my corner safe, because I'm not safe, because I feel unsafe. Rather than going, oh, we all need to hold hands and see each other collectively and be like, oh, we're all in this together. But that is, it's scarier than, like, sort of locking the doors, I think people make. Because that's an act that makes you feel, I've done something. I did do something. I locked the door. Rather than like, oh, I kept the door open and I spoke to someone. And I tried to see their point of view and I tried to understand. Like, all of those things are hard.
It's like we have to be more creative in the strategies that we use to try and change the world and not use the same strategies that are used to create and maintain the status quo. And what I mean by that is, and this kind of, I think, links back to grief as well. Like, grief is very much an internal experience, like we're going through it, but we know that when we're able to share our grief with another person, with other human beings, yes, the grief doesn't go away, but something else has the opportunity to come in.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. We don't have to be consumed by it forever in the way that it feels like a black hole that has swallowed us and that we live there forever. When we get to share it with others and grieve together, mourn together, be witnessed, all of those things, like something else has the chance to come in.
Yeah.
And so I really think about like the power of community and kind of linking back to what I was saying about my mom earlier. And I said, she's a strong African woman, and she's very much that person's like, I can do everything by myself, you know, and I can carry it now. Never really wants to show her vulnerability. But when she lost, you know, when we lost our family members, and I got to see her really be vulnerable and really understand, like, she carries a lot, but even she knows I can't do this alone, you know. And I really appreciated her letting me in, letting us in, and, you know, allowing us to support her in that moment, and her understanding, like, I can't do this alone. I need my family. I need my siblings. You know, we're going to get through this together. And it's just that reminder, like, you're going to be really, really strong, really resilient and all of that. And you're still going to need other human beings.
Sometimes you need someone to tell you to eat the dates.
That's right.
Sometimes someone needs to say it. Like, you don't want to say it, but someone, you need to someone else to go eat the dates. You know, thank you. I needed to eat the dates. Layla, thank you so much. I could talk to you forever, honestly. Like, it is just so interesting. And you know, if you haven't read either version of the book, I think either one, however old you are, both of them are accessible.
I agree. You know, like, actually, I think both versions. I think the young reader's edition is actually very good for adults.
I was just rereading it this morning, and I was like, oh, it's nice to be talked to in very just really like simple. Like, you're like, thank you just for breaking down for me again. Like, what does that mean? And what does that, like, versus ethnicity? And I was like, oh God, sometimes you just need someone to like calmly speak to you. It's really nice. Thank you so much for remembering your two uncles today as well, and sharing your thoughts with us. It was really, really wonderful.
Thank you for having me, Carrie. This is wonderful. Thank you.
If you want more information about Layla's work, head to laylafsaad.com, and that is Layla, LaylaFsaad.com, where you can find out about her books and her work. She also has a podcast, the Good Ancestor podcast, which is incredible. So check her out on social media and Instagram and her website. You can find out more about her there. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was edited by Kate Holland. It was recorded remotely in my living room and Layla's living room, where she lives in the Middle East. And the artwork was by Jade Perkin. Thank you so much for listening. Really sincerely appreciate it. I'm going to leave special messages now for the end listeners, because I feel like the folks that get here, you deserve it. So thank you so much. You're amazing. I'm astounded every day by how connected and brilliant this podcast makes me feel and makes us all feel. So thank you very much for listening. And remember, you are not alone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.